Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 8, Text 10, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Nunang hiarya sadhava upashama shila kripana suhrida evang vidharte swarthan api guru taran upekshante. Translation. Even though one is in the renounced order, one who is advanced certainly feels compassion for suffering living entities. One should certainly neglect his own personal interests, although they may be very important, to protect one who has surrendered. Purport. Maya is very strong. In the name of philanthropy, altruism, and communism, people are feeling compassion for suffering humanity throughout the world. Philanthropists and altruists do not realize that it is impossible to improve people's material conditions. Material conditions are already established by the superior administration according to one's karma. They cannot be changed. The only benefit we can render to suffering beings is to try to raise them to spiritual consciousness. Material comforts cannot be increased or decreased. It is therefore said in Srimad Bhagavatam, Talabhyate dukhavad anyata sukham. As far as material happiness is concerned, that comes without effort, just as tribulations come without effort. Material happiness and pain can be attained without endeavor. One should not bother for material activities. If one is at all sympathetic or able to do good to others, he should endeavor to raise people to Krishna consciousness. In this way, everyone advances spiritually by the grace of the Lord. For our instruction, Bharat Maharaj acted in such a way. We should be very careful not to be misled by so-called welfare activities conducted in bodily terms. One should not give up his interest in attaining the favor of Lord Vishnu at any cost. Generally, people do not know this or they forget it. Consequently, they sacrifice their original interest, the attainment of Vishnu's favor, and engage in philanthropic activities for bodily comfort. This, which is stated here, even though one is in the renounced order, one who is advanced certainly feels compassion for suffering living entities. One should certainly neglect his own personal interests, although they may be very important to protect one who has surrendered. This statement is very good. But it's, if misapplied, it can be the cause not of elevation, as one might think, but of degradation. It's similar in that sense to Arjuna's arguments, which were very good arguments, but they were applied in such a way that Arjuna's statements were made in the background of his own personal attachment. And so although what he spoke was very good, the practical application of it would be that he would continue being in the Maya that had impelled him to make such statements. As Srila Prabhupada writes here, another of those Srila Prabhupada aphorisms, Maya is very strong. Short sentence. Just a few verses previously, another similar aphorism of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada writes, the laws of nature work in subtle ways unknown to us. So here we have an example of Bharat Maharaj thinking in a very noble way. He didn't give up his Krishna conscious philosophy or his understanding that had impelled him to leave everything. When we say someone leaves everything, he left everything and went to the forest. Well, for some people, everything might mean a little hut and a few kitchen utensils and not much else. But for Bharat Maharaj, it meant everything, the whole planet. Really meant everything. So he left everything and went to the forest because he understood that we have to be Krishna conscious. Maya is very strong. Bharat Maharaj already understood that Maya is very strong. So to get away from that Maya, he went to the forest. And it's not just a matter of going to the forest and doing some bird watching or something like that, but engaging in severe austerity so that even though in the forest there's, especially if you're alone, there's very little opportunity for any sense gratification. So that's already a big start on the path of self-realization, but he engaged in severe austerities also in an effort to purge out even the slightest trace of any desire for sense gratification. Desire comes in various phases. There's the within the consciousness, deep consciousness, this Sigmund Freud, he made some analysis of the subconsciousness, but this was already, he brought into the Western way of thinking. He's been extremely influential in Western thinking, Sigmund Freud's ideas about, or analysis of the mind. So he talks about the subconsciousness, but that's already analyzed in Vedic psychology, that there's the chitta within which the consciousness within which there are sanskars or impressions, literally means impressions, which we're mostly unaware of, but from the sum total of these sanskaras mixed in a complicated way with karma or the general desire to enjoy this world, iccha dvesha sabud, mixed with iccha and dvesha, general desire and general feeling of animosity towards others. When these are mixed, then these emerge as various vasanas or general tendencies. And then specific desires. One may have a general tendency, for instance, to one may have, or everyone in this world has the tendency to enjoy interactions with the opposite sex, and that becomes a specific desire when one happens to meet a member of the opposite sex, unless one is self-realized, as you were saying yesterday, Srila Prabhupada's miracle, that what he could do, floating in the air. Srila Prabhupada didn't do such things. Well, he did sometimes on a small scale, but he didn't make a big show of it. But the ability to be with beautiful women and not have the desire to enjoy them, it's very rare. So, these subtle desires that in Bharat Maharaj, the desire still to enjoy it came to the enjoy, not in a very gross way, but to be the noble protector, in this case of a deer. As in his role as a king, a pious king assumes the role not of a despot persecuting the citizens, but in the role of a strict and kind, like a strict and kind father. And in this way, he's the protector of the citizens. And that is his maya. He may do it on behalf of the Supreme Lord. Ishvara Bhava. This is one of the qualities, essential quality of a kshatriya, which is listed by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. Ishvara Bhava. The feeling that I'm in control here. He has to do that on behalf of the Supreme Lord. But still, if it's not fully purified, then that tendency to want to benefit others, that can drag one down also. The Varnashram system is for, has various salutary effects, one of which is that it gives a channel for people to take their material desires and engage in activities, and in this way serve Krishna. And therefore, swakarmana tamabhyacha siddhin vindati manavaha. Every person, every human, every man can attain perfection by performing his own prescribed duties within Varnashram and worshipping Him, Ishvara, the real Ishvara, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But at the same time, one has to understand what is Maya. Otherwise, simply by doing one's prescribed duties, without worshipping Krishna, then one falls into Maya. And that's the problem. Although as Srila Prabhupada sometimes said, actually the caste system was very good in many ways. Caste system by birth, in many ways, had many advantages. There was no unemployment. There was no insecurity as to what you would do in future. It was already chalked out for you. You may say, well, that doesn't give you the freedom and this and that. But there's no need for a useless, massive school system when most people, even today, everyone goes to school, but most people, for what they do later in life, it's superficial. Going to school for 10 years doesn't help the auto rickshaw driver at all. Well, maybe you can read the signs, but then most of the signs are pictograms anyway. And in India, if you have signs on the road, what are you going to do in Bangalore? You need them in 5 languages at least. So there are many advantages to that. And it is stressed throughout Shastra. But then if you miss the point, tamabhyacha siddhin vindati manava, that by one's work one is supposed to worship Krishna and become purified, then you miss the whole point. Therefore, dharma svanushtita pungsa vishvaksena katasu yaha nutpadyad yadiratim shrama eva hi kevalam. Without developing a taste for hearing about Krishna, then all the work is, everything you do is useless. Ultimately, it's useless. So, Maya is very strong. Bharat Maharaj, even though he had become so, he was so committed to overcoming Maya and to becoming Krishna conscious. Many people, they only get half the equation, and therefore they don't get anything. They think they just want to get free of Maya, but they don't think that we have to worship, that the goal of life is to worship Krishna. And for them, aruha kritrena parang padang tatam Patantyato nadrita yushvarangra. They go up with a lot of trouble, they go up to the spiritual sphere, but they fall down again due to not worshipping Krishna. So Bharat Maharaj had the formula right, and he was executing it in all seriousness and was doing well. But Maya is very strong. And so he's thinking here the same philosophy, the right philosophy, but he's misapplied it. One should certainly neglect his own personal interests, although they may be very important to protect one who has surrendered. That is true for a Kshatriya, and the great example of that is Rantideva, who even the Buddhists quote him. They turned him into a bodhisattva. You know that? He's an example of one who sacrificed for the benefit of others. The hawk and the dove, who were Indra and who else? Brahma? So, who had come, and Rantideva is the great philanthropist and the protector of the citizens. He as the dove took shelter of the king and said, "Protect me." And the king said, "Okay, I'm here to protect you." And the hawk said, "Well, what about me? I'm your citizen also. And that's my food. So you have to give me the dove." So the king said, "Well, okay, I'll give you the weight of my own body in exchange." So he cut off part of his body, put it on the weighing scale, and it wasn't heavy enough. So he cut off more, cut off more, cut off more, and still it wasn't heavy enough, so he put his whole body on the weighing scale. Which is a nice sentiment, but if any of his ministers had been there, they'd have said, "Don't do that. You can't sacrifice your life for the sake of a hawk. You have a more important thing to do as a king, to protect all the... To fulfill the desire of this hawk, then you'll put the whole kingdom into jeopardy." But anyway, the idea is there, that the king, he can give up his own personal interest to protect those who are surrendered. So that is a Kshatriya principle. And many a fine Kshatriya has nobly died and happily died. Sukhinam, what is that? Sukhina Kshatriya Patar Labante Yudham Idrisham. They've happily died on the battlefield, knowing that by doing so, swaga dwaram apavritam, the gates of heaven are open. So this is a Kshatriya duty, to neglect your own personal interests. You may die even, but you have to protect others. But when this is applied that to this principle, that the swartha gati, the goal of our self-interest, is Vishnu, then you got muddled up. Then you got the philosophy wrong. I can give up my Krishna consciousness to protect someone who is dependent, requiring. We often see people are compromised because of that. There are many examples of that. I first saw Srila Prabhupada's books. They were shown to me by my best friend at school. I must have been about 16 or 17 years old. And he said, "I went to London at the weekend, I got these books," and he showed them to me eagerly. And I said, "Ah, Indian Swamis, they're all cheaters. I don't want anything to do with that." That was my first time I saw Prabhupada's books. I didn't look at them. But he was very interested, and he later got more books, and then I joined the movement, and he said, "I can't join," because he had, I don't know, about 8 or 9 or 10 sisters, and he was the only son. He was the eldest, and his father was an Irish bricklayer, which means he was a drunkard and he spent all his money on beer. Normal Irish family in England. So he thought, "I have to look," and his eldest sister at the age of 14 made his parents grandparents. So he thought, "I have to look after the family." He was interested, but I lost contact. And there are many, many examples like this of people who, for the sake of the family or whatever, they have to... Now, it is a it can be a tricky point how to advise people, because we also don't want, in the name of Krishna consciousness, that people should become irresponsible and just whimsically give up family duties, especially if they are parents with dependent children. So there are various considerations, but one should hear this Bharat Maharaj. One should certainly neglect his own personal interests to protect one who has surrendered, but one should know what is one's personal interest, first of all. What is one's deepest, and actually what the real personal interest. By sacrificing one's personal interest on the material platform to benefit others, one acquires punya. To sacrifice one's own personal interest to help uplift others spiritually, for instance, you might like to sit at home peacefully, but instead you go out and distribute Srila Prabhupada's books. And you may have to... In the Western countries, it used to be quite often that devotees would get insulted, physically assaulted, arrested for distributing Srila Prabhupada's books. But devotees would do so for the benefit of others, out of compassion for others. And here in India also, one may have to, especially in the heat of the summer, can be very difficult. But even though it's very difficult, one may neglect one's own personal bodily comfort to help others by bringing Krishna consciousness to them. And one is favored by Krishna for doing so. Krishna is pleased by doing that. But if we think that I have to neglect my Krishna consciousness to help others on the material platform, it's a very tenuous position. And here Srila Prabhupada develops the theme of how Bharat Maharaj has misinterpreted the philosophy. It's actually a misinterpretation of the philosophy, which looks very good and very saintly. And Bharat Maharaj, he thought he was being very saintly by doing so. But it was the right philosophy, but misapplied. And as a result, he didn't stop being Krishna conscious, but his Krishna consciousness was interrupted. And Srila Prabhupada develops this theme by talking about philanthropy, altruism, which is similar to philanthropy. Well, philanthropy is one aspect of altruism, and communism. And this is certainly relevant to our ISKCON movement at the present time, in which in certain sectors of our movement or certain branches, there's a lot of emphasis on bodily welfare activities. We have to be very careful. The aim may be ultimately to serve Krishna. But we have to be very careful not to be diverted or to divert others. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur stated in this regard that the ringing of the bell in the temple during the arati by a neophyte devotee helps people in all ways, millions and millions of times, both materially and spiritually. Even materially it helps them more than by opening innumerable hospitals, schools, and so on. Now, this might seem very difficult to understand. Ringing the bell. It's deliberately given as an example of a very ordinary activity that can easily be done. May seem to be very ordinary. I mean, ringing a bell, so what? But it is extraordinary because it is executed for the pleasure of Krishna. Whereas activities which are much more difficult to perform, such as opening and hospitals and running hospitals, it's not an easy thing to do. It requires much effort, and it seems to have much more benefit. I mean, it's tangible that people go into the hospital sick and they come out healthy. Of course, some of them come out dead also, but you can't blame that on the hospital in every instance. In many instances, actually, they give the wrong medicine, or they mix up the records and give the treatment to someone who's meant for someone else, and so on. That happened with Sri Devi's mother. You remember that? Sri Devi. Anyone remember the name of Sri Devi? The Iyengar actress from Chennai who became a Bollywood heroine? Forgotten. Largely for the new generation won't have heard of her because she's not beautiful anymore. It happens to every beautiful young woman if they don't die young, like Marilyn Monroe. So she sent her mother to America for treatment, and they mixed the records up and they operated, they did the wrong operation on her. It happens sometimes. Everyone's fallible, even scientists, believe it or not. So generally it's expected that people come out of a hospital in better shape than they go in. And not economically, but the doctor goes in and comes and goes out better economically, and definitely the owner of the hospital comes out. But it's presumed that it's doing something tangible to help people. And as we often used to get upbraided by righteous members of the public here in India, what are you doing for people? Why don't you open a hospital and schools and do something practical for the people like me? I contributed for a bus shelter so that people, they can stand in the shade, and when they reach my factory they're not already exhausted and they can work harder and make me more profit. Oh, excuse me, I didn't mean to say that. These philanthropists, they contribute for building new schools. The great work they're doing, so they have more people to choose from in their workforce, and they can pay them less and then squeeze them out to the max, and when they collapse they can just get another one. And this is called philanthropy, opening schools to help people. So here Srila Prabhupada has written, philanthropists and altruists do not realize that it is impossible to improve people's material conditions. This statement, along with the statement which came in yesterday's purport, the one that was read yesterday, Srila Prabhupada states that, where is that statement? As far as the material body is concerned, we cannot do anything for anyone. Now these statements, they don't seem to tally with observable reality. Talabhyate dukhavadanyata anyata sukham kalena anyatra gabhira ranghasa. That's actually another verse, isn't it? Yeah. One should endeavor for that which cannot be attained, even by wandering up to the heaven, the highest planets, and going all over the universe. Because in this world, sukham indriyakam daitya deha yogena, what is that? Deha yogena dehina. How does it go? Anyway, it's the same purport as this verse. Sukham indriyakam. That happiness and distress, they come without, sometimes we get something desirable without trying for it. Sometimes you get something undesirable We think, why did it happen to me? I was just doing my, just going about my business as I do every day, and then all of a sudden, I was just walking over the road, and then all of a sudden a car swerved and hit me, and I went to hospital, which was opened by a philanthropist. Why did it happen to me? Well, it all happens because Purusha Sukha Dukkhanam Bhuktvidve Heturichyate. We make our own destiny by our activities. And we can't get out of this cycle. You try and make the body healthy. Yes, some such statements are made that you can't do anything to help the body. And on the other hand, there are other statements, such as that which is, I believe, from Hitopadesh, which Srila Prabhupada stated that nahi suptasya singhasya pravishanti mukhe mrigam. Where's that from? You're nodding there, Shruti Kirti, you learned that. Is that from Hitopadesh? Were you taught that in your Sanskrit class? You heard it before. That the animal, the deer, doesn't come up to the sleeping lion and say, "My dear lion, I'm your breakfast." He doesn't do that. The lion, he has to get up and chase the deer or whatever, and then he gets his breakfast. So the implication is, and Krishna also says something similar, that sharira yatra pichate na prasiddhyate karmanaha. Even to maintain the body, even to go on with life in this world, in this body, you can't attain perfection in that, or you can't fulfill that by not working. So everyone has to do some kind of work. So both considerations, they seem to be opposing. But the fact is that although Purusha Sukha Dukkhanam Bhuktvidve Heturichyate, we make our own happiness and distress, but everything is going on under the direction of Krishna. And through Krishna's energies, he's overseeing all of this. So we may get material happiness at some point, and that will be followed by distress, and that will be followed by happiness, and that will be followed by distress. It goes in cycles like this. And when we say happiness, there's no unmixed happiness. There's always some distress, even in the heavenly planets. And even in the hellish planets, there's also some happiness. You're condemned to a river, live in a river of stool and pus, and you get used to it, and you think, "Oh, that's nice. Whoa, look at that piece of pus floating over there. Whew, I get it quicker than the other person who's trying to get it." They take pleasure in hellish enjoyment. That's stated in the Bhagavatam. They actually take pleasure in hellish enjoyment. And we see that also. The pig is very happy to eat stool. You'll see two big pigs. Someone passes stool, and he has his stick there so they don't, in the fields. He has a stick there to keep the pigs away. But as soon as he gets up, the pigs will be running and trying to get each other out of the way to get that stool. I think it was the first time I went to Vrindavan. No, it was the second. I did Vrindavan Parikrama. In those days, it was all kacha paths. Now it's a highway, the Vrindavan Parikrama. So this is about, I guess, about 6 o'clock in the morning. So I was going around, and then there was a house, and on the first floor, on the veranda, a little boy came out, parked himself down, and pop, 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 and the hog was there. He had his daily regular timing. And sun was going all over his face. The first time I'd seen it, so it was quite, it made a deep sun scar, deep impression in my mind. That you don't see that kind of thing in good old England, where I'd come from. You don't see it in India now, if you live in the city. So the pig was, you know, great, you know. Fresh, hot, tasty. And he likes that chili flavor, probably. The Indians eat lots of chilies. The pigs in Andhra Pradesh must be in ecstasy. They got so much chilies. But they think that's the point. They think it's happy. They think it's nice. They like it. It's hellish. It's completely hellish. That's a punishment for a human to be forced to eat stool. That's a punishment. Unless you're Frank Zappa. Who knows where he is now? One of those pigs, probably. Because you get what you aim for. You know that? Frank Zappa, Ed Stool, one of his tricks. Yeah. Well, so I heard someone, because they're all trying to outdo each other in gross degradation, so someone passed Stool on stage. And then to outdo him, Frank Zappa ate it. This is, so we've heard. So, if you haven't heard the name Frank Zappa, then 99% of your life is saved, not spoiled. So we're supposed to be talking about Krishna here, but we have to go through many, many, many layers of peeling off all varieties of misconceptions before we can properly reach Krishna. Bharat Maharaj, seemed to be so close to Krishna, but there was still something in his heart which pulled him down. The noble desire to help a deer. So the noble desire to help people on the bodily platform. How far do you go? How far should you get involved? If you're walking on the street and you see someone is attacking someone else, should you get involved or not? It happened a few years ago in Belgium. One of our devotees saw a thief attacking someone else, and he went to protect. He had nothing to do with either of the people. He got involved, and then the thief slashed him with a knife, and the last I heard, the devotee was fighting for his life in hospital. Should you get involved or not? Should we be callous to all these things? These are very difficult questions, which may be difficult to answer they'll vary from situation to situation. If you see, the common example given in the Western world, if you see an old woman and she's struggling to cross the road because she can only walk very slowly and there's a lot of traffic, you might just go in the street and halt the traffic so she can cross. You might do a small thing like that. Or if you see, it often happens to me, you see some elderly person and going on the plane and they're having difficulty putting their bag up in the rack, so you just take it and pick it up. But how far do you go with that? If he invites you home to his house, and how far do you go? If you can do something easily without getting entangled, what's the harm? As Srila Prabhupada translates this here, even though one is in the renounced order, one who has advanced certainly feels compassion for suffering living entities. That means you don't become so renounced that you just leave the world. People say you're being irresponsible. There are duties to perform here in the world, to help the world. Why have you left? So in the renounced order, one just leaves the world. Never mind what's happening. Let it go its own way. Someone might, that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was charged. It was accused by Netaji, Subhash Chandra Bose. Why are you taking all these young men for your Gauriya Math? They should be fighting for the liberation of India. So, even though one is in the renounced order, one should feel compassion for others. And that doesn't mean that one is totally callous to people's material needs, if you can help that, without getting entangled. But how far do you go? You get entangled, and then we find in our movement there are big multi-crore operations for feeding school children with meals. Now, definitely there's a lot of devotee effort and endeavor going into that, which could have been channeled into giving people Srila Prabhupada's books, for instance. What's the payoff? Well, we say people become inclined, or they become favorable to our movement. There are so many pros and cons to be considered. At the same time, we too raise funds for this, and to get the favorable, or to get the favor of people, we have to present that, yes, we're very compassionate towards the children, we're trying to help them. And if we ask devotees, they say, well, we're just doing it because so the people will think well of us. Well, that's hypocrisy, isn't it? You say we're trying to help the children, but you don't really care about the children, you just want to get some public favor. What is that? That's hypocrisy, isn't it? That's what they tell us. But in public they say, well, we're helping the children and we really have to help them and this and that. But they don't. Either they are thinking like that, that we really want to help the children and give them a good start in life so they can get a job in some polluted factory and get lung cancer at an early age. So either they are thinking like that, which is a completely mundane way of thinking, or they're being hypocritical about it. And they're just saying that to get money from people and get public favor. So either way, one is caught in Maya. So how far do you go? Should we feed hungry people? Yes, we should feed hungry people. But how far do we go? Srila Prabhupada, if we examine his instructions, it seems quite clear that he wanted distribution at his temples. He said that no one should go hungry within 10 kilometers. Within 10 kilometers of our temple. That might suggest that there's some taking out, because not everyone can walk 10 kilometers every day to take a meal. So within a certain sphere. But then, specifically, should it be for school children? What about their parents? Are they hungry too? Should it be promoted that we are doing so to build a nation? That's not Krishna conscious philosophy, building the nation. It might be Krishna conscious if there was a king like Yudhishthira. But if there was a king like Yudhishthira, there wouldn't be hungry children anyway. It's actually the king's duty to organize, not sadhus. It's not the duty of sadhus and brahmanas to arrange. They may do so on an emergency basis, but not on a full-time basis. So there are pros and cons in this discussion. Here Srila Prabhupada is warning us, on the example of Bharat Maharaj, be careful, don't get entangled in that. And then your consciousness changes, because if you keep on saying, if you go out every day with a briefcase making collection that we're helping the children have a better, and you start to believe it yourself. Sangat sanjayate kamaha. You keep on saying it and you start to think. Yeah. So some warnings are there. Yeah, any question about this? Yeah. Don't they feed them prasadam? Don't they feed them prasadam? We're told that they feed them prasadam. Although it may not always be so. I was told by someone who told me that he had been told by one of the cooks who'd worked there that many times they don't. They have a tight time schedule. They're often in a hurry, and they don't bother, or they just forget, or whatever they may do. Srila Prabhupada's instruction is there in one letter that simply giving them food is nonsense. There must be kirtan and spiritual instruction also. When he was addressing the issue of feeding poor children, he said that simply giving food is nonsense. So, if we're to follow properly what Srila Prabhupada did, then we should give kirtan and instruction also. And even if it is prasadam, these things should be there also. But on the whole, it should be presented as prasadam also, which you're not able to do in this secular school atmosphere. Srila of India today, Srila Prabhupada instructed that in our restaurants, there should be a sign telling people that this is Krishna prasadam in the West, telling them what it is, so they don't think that they're just eating ordinary food. There's one devotee in just south of Chennai, there in M.M. Nagar, he was in Delhi, and he was appointed as the head of one unit for preparing the midday meals there. And he got fed up and left because the devotees, they didn't want him to go. They told him not to go in devotee clothes. No, you have to go in regular secular dress without tilak, and all the people you meet, you're not allowed to even let them know it's anything to do with Krishna consciousness. So he got fed up and he left. He didn't want to, they want to totally secularize, because if there's any trace that it's anything to do with Krishna consciousness, then it goes against the government principle of absolute separation of government and religion. Well, except for giving grants to Christian schools. Christians, they can do. They can. Anyway, that's another issue. But.
Can I ask about the previous point you made?
Yeah.
You indicated that.
I should get a little sunshine.
You didn't use the word straitjacket, but you said they had a path in life that they could follow, and that would give security and some of the things. People are clamoring now for freedom. But there is an old saying that if you give a fool enough rope, then he can easily hang himself.
Yeah.
But isn't that the problem with the world today? If you just think any willy-nilly thing I want to do, I should have the freedom to do it. Whereas Vedic culture is such that it directs us in our own way.
Well, definitely in Vedic culture there's a lot less freedom than people think they have in the modern world today. As I gave that example of Solzhenitsyn, who came from Russia to America, he said that both in Russia and America people are slaves. The difference is that in Russia they know they're slaves. So there are different values. The values of liberté, égalité, fraternité, they are not there in... Could you get that? That's French. Liberty, equality, it's almost the same in English. They are not values of practically all, and there's practically no society prior to pre-revolutionary France that had such values. It was just accepted everywhere that there is a hierarchy. There are some people who are born in the higher class and they have authority. And in the Christian world, there's that saying, you have to accept your lot. And within Vedic culture, there was this far more sophisticated understanding of that we get our situation according to what we do in previous lives. And that if we act within our present situation, that we can become elevated in another life, in a next life. So this idea that is accepted as, particularly as the raison d'être, to use a little more French, the reason for existence of or the underlying principle of the American way of life is that everyone should have as much opportunity, full opportunity to pursue personal pleasure. You pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Although there is significantly less opportunity in modern America than there used to be in the frontier days and pushing toward the West and all, and even this, there are some recent examples, the Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, the Google crew, there are some examples. But the idea that you should have full opportunity to, what is that? On one notebook I have it, there's a motto, there's the kind of thing they're drilling into Indian school children nowadays. Be all that you can. But the Vedic outlook is very different. It emphasizes spiritual success rather than material success, which is meaningless anyway, because we're just come into this world and within a snap of the fingers, practically, the life is over and we go to another life. So this verse, Talabhyate Dukha Vadanyata Sukham, how does that verse begin? That gives Tasyaiva Heto Prayateta Kovido Nalabhyate Dukha Vadanyata Sukham. What's the second? Kalena Sarvatra Gabhira Rangasa Teta Kovido Upriyada. It's a long time since I Yad Brahmatam Upriyadaha. Yeah, that one should not waste his time in going around and round, up and down in this material world, trying to improve one's position. One should endeavor for that which cannot be obtained by going up and down in this world. One should endeavor for that which is beyond this world. So, it's a completely different outlook on life. And that's why I think, and I feel I can invoke the modus operandi of our acharyas in this, that they in preaching Krishna consciousness, they made clear that it's something very, very different. If you try to present it as something as part of this world, then inevitably we'll just merge back into this world. We have to make it clear. This Krishna consciousness, it's not meant for material improvement. Which is, human life is not meant for that, because it's very short, and within this short time we have to make advancement in spiritual consciousness. Bharat Maharaj, he had such a material position. He just left it because he understood what's really important. So that's our preaching. And even if we don't get thousands and thousands of people to come, if a few people come, or even one, or even no one comes, we have to tell people what they really need rather than what they like to hear. It's a very dangerous policy, telling them what they like to hear instead of what they need to hear. And then once you start, then there's no end to it. And we're seeing that within our movement now, with Bollywood dances at Rath Yatra. People like it. Say, people, I don't like it. I don't think any person, I'm not saying I'm particularly cultured, but I don't think anyone of any, I mean, even Australians aren't generally known for being highly cultured, although that is a stereotype. There are many, I mean, by Western standards, very intelligent, learned and cultured people in Australia. They had this Bollywood dance at the Melbourne Rath Yatra. So I think anyone of the little higher culture, even from the Western point of view, would not be attracted to that. It's only very people of very low class tendencies would be attracted by Bollywood dancing. I say, well, it's Indian. Well, it doesn't mean that everything from India is high class. Kamsa was Indian also. One of the most famous people in the history of India, still known even today. Very powerful king. People don't think philosophically in the West, and even when they think philosophically, it's a university course. It's something to be studied. It's not that their life is not philosophical. One's whole approach to life should be philosophical, which is one reason we can say why Srila Prabhupada, following the tradition, instituted regular classes on Shastra, and he always spoke philosophically. Srila Prabhupada didn't speak to entertain. He didn't speak to make people feel good. He spoke philosophy that we need to hear to set a philosophical tenor for our movement. But at many festivals, both within the temple, which are supposed to be for devotees, and public festivals like Rath Yatra, we find there's no lecture anymore. Did you see? There's no lecture, just some entertainment, that's all. No lecture. I was at a Rath Yatra this summer in England, and I was giving a lecture, and there were all these people from the public who were coming and listening. And it was just, you know, straightforward philosophy that we're not the body and all that. And they were listening intently. All of a sudden, you have to stop now. It's time for a dance. I know it was young or old, because I just saw her from a distance, some woman cavorting around in some purple outfit. So, I would say for festivals like this, we should have kirtan lecture. We can also have dramas, which demonstrate the philosophy, but there's no need for this. Like, I've been in Rath Yatra in the West also, where the music is, they have kirtan, but it's all with this heavy rock music. No need for all this. Just, people already have heavy rock music, much better than any of our devotees can do. Better if you think it's good. Just, we have our own thing. If let them come to Krishna consciousness. Why do we have to present it as something else? I just saw that there's a flyer given out. Our one godbrother, Mahavidya in England, he put this on the internet. There's a flyer given in Northampton, some nondescript town in South Midlands of England. So he got a flyer which said Mantra Lounge, and there was a picture of a woman, a side profile, with her chest forward so that her breast stuck out. And then the devotee worked out that by the names, like Contact Gauranga Das or something like this, it was actually our devotees. And they're inviting people to Mantra Lounge. And I thought that, okay, so people, who's going to be interested to go there? People interested in mantras, maybe mantras for getting some prostitute or something like this. If anyone's actually got any serious interest in spiritual life, would they go to such a thing? I don't think so. Why attract them with this? I mean, everything is sold, everything is marketed with beautiful young women. Why this? It's so inapt and so much misrepresenting. We should think, in our endeavors to bring Krishna consciousness to others, we should think of the dignity of our sampradaya, of our acharyas. And we have Bollywood dances. And what is this? People think that we're some kind of funny people who sing in the streets. But we should let them know that we have a very grave philosophy. They should come to know that after 40 years of Krishna consciousness in the West. More than, actually it's almost 50 years now, isn't it, of Krishna consciousness in the West. People should come to know that
First of all, they should know that there is a Krishna conscious movement, and they should know that we have a very grave philosophy that merits their, at least their considering it. In India also, people think our movement, temples, you go, you look, you come out. People should know that we have philosophy. When we're talking about philosophy, we're not talking about something which some people do at school because they couldn't make it in the science stream. We're talking about what's really relevant in everyone's life. Even if you're not very intelligent or learned or educated, philosophy is for everyone because it concerns our existential position. And often we find that people who are not very well educated in the so-called modern education, they have very good understanding of philosophy because they're devotees and they take it seriously. And sometimes we find people who are very well educated, even they're good in their bhakti shastri, but they practically in their life we don't see that they live the philosophy. So it's a fact that we're promoting philosophy, and philosophy is not a well-loved subject in the modern world. People are deliberately kept stupid. Once a devotee showed me a book. It was a tongue-in-cheek kind of book, and it said, how to learn a primer of philosophy so that when you go to a party you can impress people at home. They just give a few points about philosophy. You learn a few lines from Rousseau and Francis Bacon and all these people, and then you can impress people, you know so much. They said, in the preface it said, when we're talking about philosophy, we're not talking about the kind of things that some Hare Krishna might speak to you. If you meet them, don't try to discuss philosophy with them. I'm paraphrasing, of course. Because that's real philosophy. For philosophy means, yes, Thomas Huxley said this, and he defeated the Christians, and this Adam Smith said this, and like this. Sartre said this, and oh yeah, very good, yeah. Well, actually, I'm a follower of the Vedanta. There's that said in the Lilamrita, someone in 1965 or 6 came up to Prabhupada and said, actually, I'm a follower of Vedanta. And Prabhupada said about him, Vedanta? What do you know about Vedanta? What's the first sutra of the Vedanta Sutra? Tell me. Person had no idea. So they're like, I'm a follower of Vedanta. Yeah. People like to say. It's a hobby. For us, philosophy is not a hobby. You told me, I said, what was that, at Badrinath? I forgot about that. At Badrinath, that Nambudri priest, he saw we're Vaishnavas, and so he read out the Gopi Gita from the Bhagavatam. I don't remember this. You just told me this the other day, and I said to him, this contradicts your whole philosophy. And then what else I said for? There was some discussion going on. He said it's all jugglery of words. And I said to him that for you it is, for us it's our life. Yeah. For him it's just he left at that point. I didn't remember all of that. You remember that. Shabda jala maharanyam chitta brahmana karanam. That's what they think. Words are just a big net, which is the cause of confusion, which comes in the Vivek Churamani, which is words. It's a book, it's all words. Hare Krishna, enough words here for now. Sivan Mukhe Hi Jivada, one function of the tongue is to speak and another is to honor prasad. So it's time for all of you to honor prasadam. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Thank you, Haripada Prabhu. When we say Haripada, that means plus better half. It's included. Thank you for coming. Hare Krishna.